from the front line.
It's not going to work, man.
From the tailgates. Representing KTYR and its stakeholders, we are the Forum for the Fan, the Bleed Blue Show. Flying solo, here's your host, Chris.
Well, I'm not that solo. What's up, man? I ain't that solo. I got the main man, Steve, on the line right on here.
I'm co-pilot in this one, man. I'm just taking the co-pilot route. Oh, absolutely, man.
Navigation. Hey, welcome to the Bleed Blue Show. This is the Forum for the Fans. As you know, this is Chris, and you heard the real co-pilot, Bleed Blue partner in crime, Steve, right there. We are here to discuss our beloved New York Knickerbockers. Yes, we are. Please feel free to call in at 929-477. Steve, I'm sorry you got me laughing here. 929-477-4171. And, we're going to discuss, what's happening in Knicks Nation. We haven't been doing that. We have, but there's been other things that have been taking precedence over this, like the NCAAs and, of course, the G-Men moves and all that. So we're going to talk about our New York Knickerbockers tonight.
I'll put it like this, man. The Bleed Blue Show, we had the discussion with Knickerbocker Ave last night. I'm nicked out at this point. The Knicks are right now leading 10 points over Dallas. I got it on the screen right now. Watching the Knicks, they're doing all right out there in Dallas, Texas, right now against the Mavericks. But let's get to the point. Let's get to the NCAA, man. I'm not gonna placate with this one. Let's talk what really, really, really matters. No, don't get it wrong. We are the Forum for the Fans for the Knicks. You can go back to the episode last night with the infamous Knickerbocker Ave and get all the breakdown what we discussed last night on the Knicks. But the NCAA tournament, Chris. We gotta get into this, man. We gotta get into this.
Hey, listen. Okay. Well, okay. We can start it in kind of different ways. But let me tell everybody something. Hold on, because I know we're gonna have our callers, our regular stakeholders, gonna, chime in and tell us what they feel, what they're thinking, how they're looking at things. So 929-477-4171 is the call-in number to Bleed Blue Show. And all you gotta do is press the number one button on your touchtone phone if you want to be on live. And for any on the air, and for any questions, any comments, anything, you can call or you can listen to the Bleed Blue Show on the live broadcast and chat room via Skype on the BTR live stream. And you guys already know you can follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all of that kind of good stuff. And also you can access the other archives, especially the one that Steve was on with Knickerbocker Ave last night. Well, you can download on iTunes, Podcast Republic, TuneIn, or anything like that. For those of y'all who are joining the roundtable, when you're going to stay on with us, just please mute your phone, and we're about to speak on mute. It's easier that way. And also try to get your point across in 90 seconds to 2 minutes so that, we can go on to the next person. We can have a spirited discussion about the NCAA tonight. Steven! Okay.
Yes, sir.
Okay, the Final Four is here.
Yes, it is.
As you know, Villanova versus Oklahoma, mm-hmm. And that's a Saturday night, 6:00. And then the game right after that, the last number one seed in the tournament, North Carolina, versus the first number 10 seed to ever reach the tournament, and in the Syracuse Orange Men. Okay. And this is a very, very, very good, not only a great Final Four, but this March Madness has been nutty bananas. Unbelievable. Incredible.
Not bad.
We've seen some of the craziest things I've ever seen. It's going to take me, since I'm caught off guard a little bit, it's going to take me a little time during the show to figure out, to remember, actually, because I don't have a bracket or nothing like that in front of me. Who the hell did what? But I tell you what, it's all been spirited. I have been watching the NCAA since Bill Walton, 1972. That's how long I go back. And let me tell you something. This is probably one of the best ones ever. I love it when everybody's bracket is broke. That's when it's entertaining. And also, there's been some really, really weird instances without being really controversial during this March Madness season, too. So let's I don't know, Steven. Look, the 2 weeks ago, everyone just had either Kansas, well, North Carolina, to be fair, and also Michigan State to just do some ridiculously crazy damage in this tournament, okay? Some people were a little cautious. They said, okay, wait a minute, hold on. I have to hold on to my Texas A&Ms, my Kentuckys, my Dukes. There's also been some controversy. Why is Oregon number one out there in the Western region? And why is Syracuse even in the tournament? You know, and you've got all, you had all kinds of nuttiness there, man. You had some teams that came out there looking like they had been NCAA powerhouses for years, like South Dakota State looked great against Maryland. And I'm like, where have you guys been with five players? You know, you also were a little bit frightened of Miami, who looked very good in their first two games against Buffalo and Wichita State until they met Villanova, and that's, we'll get to that in a few too. You know, you also had some other scary people. Stephen F. Austin, you know, looked very well, you know, slapping West Virginia upside the head before just barely losing to Notre Dame. That was okay. Indiana put a couple of scares in you. They beat Chattanooga and Kentucky. I had to think about it. Yep. So that was special. That was cool. And I thought they were going to put up a better fight against North Carolina, but they were just tired. You can see it. My bracket was broken, though, Steve, on day one. Everybody knows that I played five brackets, and four of them I had Michigan State. Why did I do that? I never heard of Middle Tennessee. I never heard of them. But they came out with, like, gangbusters, and they slapped my team. They was up as many as, I think, 16 or 17 at one point. And they got slapped upside the head really, really good by, this Middle Tennessee, that is. They slapped my team up very, very, like really, it was incredible. And I was done on day one. What surprises did you see, think about, notice? What took you off guard, if anything?
Well, it really doesn't go any beyond Michigan State losing the Middle Tennessee. I mean, that's the only one that is really the shocker. I mean, it shouldn't be a shock to nobody. I mean, it should be a shock to everybody. That's the only game on the bracket that it caught everybody off guard. Everybody.
It did.
The upset. It's probably a top 10 upset special of all time. That, and it's not even an exaggeration because of how everybody had Michigan State ranked. I mean, hell, we were here on the Bleed Blue show when we did the brackets live on with you, Dr. Brackets, and I said Michigan State was going to win the whole thing.
And I echoed
you. Yeah, and that is definitely the surprise. Everything else doesn't really surprise me, and I'm going to tell you why, because I think college basketball has reached the state where a mid-major school could play or is comfortable playing the big school. I think there was a time where the big school had the advantage because there's so many ways to access information. The talent pool isn't as deep what it was 20 years ago. When I say that, I mean, usually your big dogs go to all the big schools and then all the mid-majors were left with the crumbs. Well, this time around, it's kind of like all the mid-majors have somewhat a little bit of a leverage offering. He may not be a four- or five-star recruit, but you could get him a full scholarship. You could give a guy at Middle Tennessee State a full ride, and he probably would not have gotten that at maybe a North Carolina or somewhere like that. And then you look at the AAU circuit. That's another factor in all this. When I say that, a lot of people don't understand how this thing works, where these players, they see these players. They're not intimidated when they get on the court with them. This is not like 20, 30 years ago where you read about guys in the Sports Illustrated, you read about guys, how dominant they were, and then that's all you knew. AAU has opened. There's been a lot of good, Chris, and there's a lot of bad with AAU, but the good, as far as the player perspective, point of view, he knows that he's played on the court with this opponent, and then sometimes when you play against somebody you and after that game, you may have lost to that guy. You know, you play in the AAU circuit, you play against this guy. You have the mental reset button. The brain operates in mysterious ways, meaning you've gotten to understand mentally what you can or can't not do after you have that experience with a top talent recruit. So when you happen to see talented players going down the line, you play them all the time in the AAU circuit, beating a Michigan State probably is no big deal to the people who are playing the game. It probably
right.
isn't. They play top talent all the time, all summer long,
mm-hmm.
in regional tournaments. And that's kind of
mm-hmm.
how this thing has worked. It's opened that type of avenue where mid-major talent could play against the big boys. And don't be surprised if they win. I mean, it doesn't shock me. It really doesn't. And also, Chris, one more thing I want to add. I'm getting a little long-winded. But
no, God,
these mid-majors now, they play the big schools all the time now. Now, it was never really like this all the time. Like, I'm talking about on the regular season schedule. Like, they're actually begging to play the big schools because they know RPI and winning mm-hmm. games gives them a better chance to get into the tournament just in case they don't get an at-large bid.
Right.
That's right. And I think there's a lot of these factors that weigh in why these upsets may occur. But the Middle Tennessee, that was a little shocker to me. But outside of that, I mean, any of these teams could play with anybody. Like when I said with Yale beating Butler, that didn't surprise me, you know. 10 years ago,
yeah.
it would shock the world.
You called it. I wasn't really prepared for that episode as much as I should have. I was just coming out of work, and there was my own episodes out there. And then I got to the show, and one of the things that you had mentioned was that don't be surprised if Yale pulls an upset on Baylor. And
mm-hmm.
I said, I'm looking at the numbers. Baylor's a 5 seed, and Yale's a 12 seed. And then I started thinking about it, and I said, well, Yale has players that have been together 3 years, like you and I. You, University of Northern Iowa. You know, Middle Tennessee, Stephen F. Austin, Little Rock. You know, all of these kind of teams have been together for some South Dakota State. These guys have been together for a little while. You know, and so what happened is there's familiarity and there's that yearning to win together. And you put you combine those elements together, and you go out there and you're not afraid to take on a Kentucky, a Notre Dame, a Duke, a Baylor. And so,
and,
yes, competition is better. Yes.
And you're also getting into the tournament consecutive years. I mean, some of these schools are at least getting in there at least every other year. So it's familiar territory. You're building a culture.
Northern Iowa.
With these,
right.
Yeah, exactly. Or Stephen F. Austin. Got teams like that.
Right.
Or Middle Tennessee.
Exactly.
You're starting to be in the field with the regular guys frequently because you're winning your conference championships. So, I mean, there's
exactly.
a lot of ways you can look at it, and there's factors in it. But it's still entertaining basketball. I agree, man. I mean, I like that Northern Iowa game, the half-court shot. They made it beat Texas, beat Shaka Smart's team. I mean, there's been
mm-hmm.
but the craziest, Chris, I think we discussed this a little bit, the Texas A&M meltdown. I've never seen in my life. I mean, not them, but Northern
never.
Iowa.
You Never. Won't see that in Pee Wee ball. You won't see that. You won't see that on outside courts or nothing.
Yeah.
They had because it was crazy too. Because you and I just defeated, like you just said, they just defeated Texas on that last second 60 footer by that one player. I forget his name.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he came out. Paul Jefferson. That was his name. And he threw that thing like straight in, and you had to feel for the Texas players, but right after that, 2 nights later, I have never
mm-hmm.
seen what you Northern Iowa's done. The Texas A&M Aggies went on a 14-2 run in 31 seconds of the second half to force overtime.
Mm-hmm.
That's a crazy number. That means total collapse. I don't even know how to describe it. I know one thing. I love watching it on YouTube over and over again.
Yeah,
because because I try to break it down. I try to figure out what went wrong. What happened? And basically, I think the lights got kind of big, and they just sort of like they just got shell shocked. But they did try to hang in there in the second, the first overtime. But they lost in the second overtime because Texas A&M is one of those resilient teams, man, that just will each other to do it. They had a win like that over the against Kentucky in the regular season, one of the last two or three games of the season. And that, after that, they started propelling themselves. But they didn't look like that when they played Oklahoma. Then after that, I guess they were probably pretty tired. It was just too much for them.
Let's speak on that. Let's speak on that, because that's where we're going with this Final Four episode.
Yes, we are.
Tuesday recap part two of this week in sports. But here's man. Let's go with that. What happened with Texas A&M? Were they burnt out versus Northern Iowa? Was Oklahoma just too much for them? Like, how did you see this game when it developed?
A little bit of all of that. What I saw was, yes, there was a burnout, because not a complete burnout, but there was some fatigue because they had just gone through a little bit of a war there, you know, and that was something else. Okay, but Oklahoma is a superior team, pure and simple. We talked about earlier, Steve, about the fact that some of these mid-majors and smaller schools, you know, they've been together for 3 or 4 years, man, some of these players. Well, Oklahoma's the rare, gigantic major college team that has three starters that have been together for 3 years, you know. And you're sort of like, wow, you know, you can do that. I know Buddy Hield was supposed to leave last year, but he came back and, you know, so, yeah, they weren't prepared for a team of Oklahoma's caliber. That's the bottom line there with that. That region, the West region, was a head-scratcher to begin with. I sometimes look at it like, you know, I got to find my bracket while I'm talking. But I looked at that bracket when it first happened, and Oregon was slated to be number one in a region that had Duke, that had Oklahoma, that had, you know, VCU. You know, and I'm going – and Baylor at the time, pretty formidable. And St. Joe's, you know, that's another team. But and I said to myself, you know, this is either a weak region – no, it's either a very competitive region, or this is a cakewalk, easy region for Oklahoma to just walk on by, because I don't think any of these teams can beat them. And VCU gave them hell, okay, but – Sweet 16 came, and Texas A&M didn't seem to show up. And then Oklahoma, finally, as a number two seed, finally got their moment against Oregon. Everybody pretty much thought it was going to be probably a powerhouse game. It wasn't even close. Buddy Hield went out there looking like Steph Curry.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I thought Oregon was overrated.
I'd say they were a lot of overrated after that one. You don't lose when you're a number one seed. You don't lose your region by what was it, 12 points or something like that. You don't do that, you know. And they were lucky it was that close. It was, you know, and they just didn't show up. They didn't show up, and I don't know what the voters are doing, but Oklahoma, as we said, that's our one of the Final Four teams. They won the West region, and they look poised to have a special time right now. But if you know anything, Steven, which I know you do, certain magic happens in the Final Four that sometimes goes without explaining. And this has been that tournament that has been there's been a lot of weird things that have happened. So I'm going to go ahead. We're going to do it with the predictions later, but I'm going to go ahead and pick them to look good. How about that at this point? But I'm not going to predict them to win yet. I'm going to wait on that. I want to know what you think about Oklahoma's chances, bro.
I like Oklahoma's chances a lot, now, especially now that Kansas is out of the picture. Because I thought it would have took somebody like a familiar foe, an in-conference rival to really step up to him. But when Kansas lost to Nova, I think this is Oklahoma. All of these teams could win it. I mean, if I had to put a percentage on it, I think Oklahoma is probably at – I'm going to say Oklahoma at 45%, North Carolina at 40%, Syracuse after Nova. So Nova probably has a 20% chance, and then Syracuse is last, whatever remaining percentage out of those that weight. But Oklahoma, they love the three ball. They really do. And when they make them, they're a very tough out. Oregon got shell-shocked with a lot of threes. Buddy Hield just was in the zone. Point guard Jordan Woodard. He's steady. He can make open shots as well. They have a lot of guys they could turn to as far as making the three ball. I mean, it doesn't even have to even when Buddy Hield wasn't even on his game, you have guys like Cousins, he'll deliver. You have Sprangler, Walker. I mean, they have other contributors. And but here's the thing. The game versus Nova coming up on Saturday. I wish that game was the 8 o'clock game. That's actually the early game. I wish that game was the 8 o'clock game. I wish they would flip-flop the times, make Syracuse, North Carolina the early game. Because we've seen those two teams play each other twice in the regular season. I'd rather see that's the heavyweight matchup I want to see after what Nova did to Kansas. I love that game. I know. What's your thoughts as far as that game with Kansas and Villanova, and the way Villanova was able to put the pressure defensively on Seldon Jr., on Graham, Devontae Graham, and then also Frank Mason Jr. Perry Mason had nothing for the Villanova Wildcats. What's your thoughts on that game? Because that's the game I really wanted to talk to you about out of all the games in the early days.
He didn't show up. He didn't show up. I don't know what – I was scratching my head about that. I don't know what happened there. I was going to ask you. I don't know what happened there. I have no – okay. Because I thought if anybody was to be a force down low, it was going to be him. Look, he played – okay. Oh, God. Look. He had one of the best games of his career 2 days before that. Okay. One of the best games of his career, I'm saying, his career against Maryland, my team. Well, my alma mater, I should say. Okay? I don't understand. He was never in foul trouble. He took 5 shots. He had 4 turnovers. He did not look like he wanted to hit the ball aboard, Steve. It didn't look like it. His head was somewhere else. I don't know what it was. I've always tried to wonder whether or not the guy that plays the 5 for Villanova. I'm getting a brain fart.
You talking about Lucas?
You know, got in his head or what, man? He was excellent. He had 11 rebounds. You know, he had a couple of assists.
Villanova. I thought you were talking about Kansas. I'm sorry. I'm talking about the big man for Kansas. You're talking about Villanova.
You're talking about Ellis.
Yeah. No, you said who got in his head for Villanova. My bad.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, and then, no, that's what
it's
I was
number
saying,
23,
you know,
just... Achifu was killing him.
Oh,
that dude was playing. He was a low
he
down.
He was the man. I couldn't remember him. I couldn't remember his name. Look. It was supposed to be a real high scoring offensive game, okay? And to give Kansas some credit, they did lock down on defense, you know, for a little bit, you know, but. And they did also try to make a kind of a run also. I'd say maybe 6 minutes in. I'm not really sure, you know, because they took like a 5-point lead and they had like about 11 minutes to go. I don't know if you remember that part. But I said, okay, here you go. They're making their run. They're going to hold them off. But I don't know what happened. It's like they just stopped. First of all, they stopped shooting. And also they had that familiar And Steve, I know a lot of our stakeholders can allude to this besides yourself. Sometimes a team that has confidence in how they execute, if the person that they look to, if their number one option can't hit the side of an ocean standing on the beach, okay, then they go to the second option, and the second option may be in foul trouble. So then they're all looking at each other silly. And that makes everything out of sync all of a sudden offensively. And then you allow the other team to come back. And that's what I feel happened in that game. You know, Jay Wright just had them. He said, look, keep playing. And they did. It was bewildering to me. But one thing I did want Villanova to pull an upset because I wanted to see new blood like I always do. I wanted to see something different happen. But I didn't know that they would get what I consider humiliated, even though it's 6 points or a 5-point win. I consider that a humiliation because you got to remember this was the consensus number one team coming into the entire tournament out of all 64 teams. They go look at Kansas. They go 9 deep, man. You know, they don't take a lot. They normally don't make a lot of mistakes, and that's what I never did understand. They don't make a lot of mistakes. Bruce Seldon, he was nice from the field, but he started shooting. I mean, not Bruce Seldon. Bruce Seldon's a boxer. Wayne Seldon was he was like 0-for-6 from the three, and
he had a bad first half.
The last two were clean, Steve. Clean open looks. Clean.
He shot a lot of air balls.
A lot of air balls. He was just all over the place. You know, Lucas was good. They should have tried to get the ball to him a little bit more often. You know, he had a really good game. I don't know what the hell they were doing. You know, Devontae Graham hit like 5 threes in that game.
Yeah,
but
he kept them in
there.
Perimeter shoot.
Once he fouled out, bye. So I think it was a collapse. That's what I look at it. I think
not
it was a collapse. They collapsed.
But not as much as of a collapse as the University of Virginia Commonwealth Cavaliers. That's a collapse. That's the second worst collapse of the tournament. I didn't really have a chance to reach out to you about that game. And as a matter of fact, this is the first time the Bleed Blue Show, Steve and Chris, is actually talking about this game.
You're talking about
the
game against Oklahoma?
No. I was moving on. I mean, we'll go back. I'll go back to Kansas and Villanova. I was moving on to Virginia and Syracuse.
Virginia Commonwealth.
Yeah, Virginia Commonwealth.
Oh.
That collapse.
Oh,
that's
damn.
The second worst. That was the second worst collapse of the tournament, behind Northern Iowa and A&M.
Tell me what you saw. I couldn't believe what I was seeing.
I couldn't believe it. I mean, I'm watching this game. Because who was playing that night? The Rangers were playing tonight, so I was kind of back and forth between that and Villanova in that game. Because I mean, I thought it was going to be a boring game, Chris. I thought Virginia controlled the game. They were up like 16. I mean, everything
it was
Virginia
boring.
Was doing, they were efficient, and the thing about I don't know. I still don't know how they came back, Chris. I'm talking about Syracuse. I still don't understand. I mean, I watched the game. I don't recall. I mean, it's like Virginia just stopped playing. It's like they froze. It's like they – as if – I mean, they didn't get – I can't remember them scoring. And Syracuse would just make bucket after bucket, and then they caught them and then went ahead of them and never looked back. It's like one of the weirdest things you'll ever see in a college basketball game. And weirdest thing, because you're talking about a top – seed in the region, and Syracuse is what, 10? I mean, Syracuse, I mean,
yes.
It's a big time school, though. Big time coach, big time school.
Yes.
I mean, they've been around, but I mean, I didn't see this coming, though. I know they play in the same conference, but this shocked me, man. I mean, that run, they outscored them by 20 in the second half. It was like a tale of two games because Syracuse was dead in the first half, dead. They had nothing. I'm glad I even watched the game in its entirety, Chris, because I almost turned the game fully. Like, I wasn't going to watch it because I thought it was a boring game in the first half. Virginia controlled everything.
Steve, I got up to make my salad. I think – I'm trying to guess this out, but I think there was 9.5 minutes left, and Virginia was up by 16, and I said, well, I could walk away from this. Then the phone rang, and I answered that. And I came back to the tube, okay? It was 3:27 left, And, you know, I saw the funny thing about TVs, you know, well, the way the screen is when they show the scores, you see the time first. And so I'm just yawning, you know, and I'm looking at the time, and it said 3:27, and it said Syracuse 64, Virginia 58. I said, I had to go get my glasses. I said, I actually missed the run. I didn't see the run in live time. I don't know how you do that. I don't know. I tell you, you are the number one. Here we go again with this statement. You are the number one seed. Everyone, they had their point guard, London Parentes.
Yeah, the bomber.
He was killing them. He was destroying them. It seemed like he stood in the same spot at the top of the key and destroyed them. I don't know how many. I don't know if he had seven or eight, three threes. I don't know what he had. But I know he went flat in the little time that I saw the 3:27 left on. He had nothing. And I remember saying, okay, this is not coaching. This is giving up. They have the wooden all-star player of the year. Malcolm Brogdon, he looked lost in that game, absolutely lost. During that period from 9 minutes on, I think that was symbolic of the entire game, man. I don't understand that. You know, they had like the point that I left. Well, see, I had to go back and see the game. Like I said, thank goodness for DVR. I went back and I rewinded it, and like around. Must have been about 7.5 minutes left. UVA, like, scored and got up on about 9, and then it seems like the next three possessions, Parentes, he turned it over, then Brogdon missed the easy layup, then Parentes missed a shot, and all of a sudden, they just started slipping. And it's not that Syracuse improved their play in that game. They just hung on, you know, kept playing, got a little bit more happy, a little aggressive, and said, hey, you know what? We actually have a champ here. And they made their run, you know? But then again, you also got to look at this, Steve. You can go back, and you got to look at, you know, okay, yes, Virginia was the number one seed, but hold on, you know, throughout the season, they've been kind of lucky, you know? They shouldn't have beat Cal. They shouldn't have beat Wake Forest. They're just very, you know, They've had these moments all year long. They're not a running team for some reason, which I don't understand with the horses they got. They don't like to run. When you make them run, they're in unfamiliar territory. I don't know what's going on there, but I know one thing: Jim Boeheim is the kind of genius, coaching genius, that is able to take advantage of your weaknesses. When he sees that you do something wrong, he makes these weird substitutes. He's done it his entire career. You know, Johnny Flynn used to be that guy, or you know, you put your two on the five down low and all these weird things, and you come up with a miracle, and that's what happened here. That's what happened here. I'm happy for Virginia, the fact that Tony Bennett, you know, has developed pretty much, let's admit it, pretty much an elite squad to this point, but they've got a lot of work to do, man. They got to find the heart. You know, because you can't fade that way in a situation like that when you're the number one seed. You just can't do it, bro.
No, you can't. And then the Notre Dame North Carolina game. I thought Notre Dame was hanging around for a while, but I thought North Carolina was the superior team. And I don't want to spend too much time on that game. That was a boring game. I actually at that point I was ready to call it a night. After a long Sunday. We're here. I mean, if you have any 2 cents from that game, from the North Carolina Notre Dame, I really don't have anything to add. It is what it is.
Not really. I'll just add this.
North Carolina was just too big for them down low.
They were too big. But I can tell you, Syracuse matches up pretty well with them. I'll leave it at that. They can match up pretty well.
Yes, they do.
They can match up pretty well with them. Whether they win or not is another story. I know one thing, if they did, that would be a crazy political thing in basketball this year. it would really be nuts. But I don't see that happening. I just don't. I don't.
Well, let's talk about that. I mean, let's talk about North Carolina Syracuse. It's the later game. I wish they switched the game times, Chris. I wish this was the early game because I'd rather see Oklahoma Nova that rematch because they played earlier in the year in Honolulu. Syracuse, North Carolina, they played twice. North Carolina went up to Syracuse and won by, I think, 11 points up in Syracuse.
Yes.
And later in the year, before the ACC tournament, Syracuse went down to Chapel Hill and lost by 5. It was a competitive game, but Chris, your thoughts as far as North Carolina, Syracuse, who you got and why you got them?
This is a tough one. In fact, I don't know why.
I'll put it like this. I'll throw it a question like this. Do you think North Carolina will win for a third time? You know, it's not as easy as what people make it to be. It's hard to really beat teams three times in the same season.
It is. Yeah, really. All right, so we're down to Houston, Texas for this game.
Okay.
Let me think about what your question is. Let me see what your question is. Okay. What was the – do you remember the scores? Do you remember the first two games, I think?
84 – okay, North Carolina went up to Syracuse,
84-73.
Yeah. One 84-73. Then about late February, they went back – North Carolina played at home, won 75-70. It was a more competitive game.
Right.
What do you – I mean, the game earlier in the year, was that a different Syracuse team than what Syracuse is now later in the year?
Yes, it was. Yeah, because Syracuse didn't know what the hell it had this year. You know, Boeheim, he missed the first 9 games for failing to take care of his program, let's put it that way. Also, did NCAA still – investigating North Carolina for that McCants thing that happened like 10 years ago.
That's a long time ago.
You know, yeah, they're still doing that. And the
John
NCAA dragging this. Yes, they're still messing up. Something about the fact that there was about 35 enrollments in classes that didn't meet, that these guys never took the test for, and they didn't meet the grades and all of this kind of stuff. And so that's still, you know, so it's a headache for the NCAA. And having put – see, so those are subplots. To answer your question, you know, so that's how the NCAA feels about it. But here's the thing. North Carolina's front line is the best in college basketball, guys.
Yeah.
You got Bryce Johnson, Kennedy Meeks, Justin Jackson. And behind them, you got Hicks coming off he's a baller coming off the bench. You got that cat, the other one, Joel James.
Yeah.
Man, that is recipe for monstrous disaster. It really, really is. Because the Orange Man only got Coleman. He could only be, I don't even know if he's 6'9". But he's the only one I see that can match them. And I'm not sure if he's really a board kind of guy, man. He just sort of I really don't have the book on him. I saw him just this tournament, and he just didn't feel like he's on that level, you know. But that game, the reason I asked you about the earlier game is a couple of months ago was when they did that, all that passing down low, that big-to-big passing, that destroyed Syracuse, man. But Syracuse still hung on. I don't know if that is the exact Achilles heel of Syracuse. Syracuse has ways to surprise you, but I don't know. The only way I see this game going Syracuse's way is that somehow North Carolina shoots itself in the foot. Okay. And I do
like
believe
what, foul trouble or something like that, or
foul trouble or something like that. I do see, but because you got see, there's another subplot here that we don't get yet. There's some kind of familiarity between Roy Williams and Jim Boeheim. They know what each other's going to do and what they're capable of, and so this is also kind of a coaching battle as well. you know, how that will affect the bigs. I mean, you know, Boeheim knows what they have, and Boeheim knows exactly how Williams coaches. Williams, on the other hand, he's satisfied with the fact that he's 2-0 this season, and also that his boys are ready to play. But Houston, you know, I tell you, every year, man, you know, there's always this debate, dome versus an arena type thing, you know. And Houston Stadium, I forgot what it's called, the Powers Radiant Stadium, I forgot what it is. That stadium is famous for being Achilles heels to shooting teams. You know, you got to remember the Final Four was there when your team, UConn, won in 11. And all of those teams shot poorly. I think Butler was in that tournament. VCU was in that tournament. Kentucky was in that tournament, right?
Yeah, we played Kentucky
So, they all suck. It's something about that court too. So that's not being an X factor too. There's all these little all these little things, you know. And the Orange, they take a lot of shots from the outside. And if they're not hitting, hey, it's gonna be 3-0 North Carolina championship game on Monday. That's what I'm looking at. I only see, and Marcus Page is going off, by the way, right now. So I only see that North Carolina can only lose this game by shooting themselves in the foot. I would love to see Syracuse win and make the NCAA laugh, or cry rather, while I laugh. But I don't know yet. I think my prediction is that would be uncomfortable. Yes, it would. But right now, and you never know. This has been a nutty March Madness season. But right now, I got to go with the short thing, man. I see the Carolina Bigs being a definitive problem right here for the. For the Syracuse Orange, man, it shows. So I'm gonna go ahead and that's gonna be my pick, bro.
Do you believe in the product from Trenton, Malachi Richardson? You don't think he's gonna have a good game to step up like the way he did in the game versus Virginia? And that's the thing.
Well,
I like Syracuse's chances. Also, I mean, Virginia, North Carolina, these are familiar teams. They see him multiple times in the season. His shooting.
Malachi.
Go ahead.
He needs his partner, Tyler Lyon, has to be just as effective for Malachi to have a great game because these guys, you got to remember, these two guys are freshmen. I don't know
yes.
how big these lights are, you know? And I don't know how big. I'm pretty sure they're being coached to handle it. Throughout his whole 40-year career, man, Boeheim has had very, very, very good fortune with freshmen in the big lights, particularly one particular one back in 03. And Jerry McNamara was on that team, and Billy Edlin. I know you remember those guys.
Of course I do.
And so with that one particular player, number 7, That's the one he helped propel to
superstar. Well, number 15
so I think
on that team. But
15,
I know
rather. Sorry, 15, actually. And so, I don't know. They have a fight. They have a puncher's chance. They have a puncher's chance.
How much is the puncher's chance? Like, what percentage you put in on that?
If it's a Syracuse Orangemen are surprisingly down by just 8, say, at the end of the first half, they have a chance to win this game. If they are down by 16, look, trust me, North Carolina is a better team than Virginia is, okay? and we'll get better coaching at that point. So I don't see much of a run. I think Roy Williams is going to say, do not take the foot off the pedal. This is how we're going to do this, okay? He's not going to slow the game down. Arrest anybody that needs to be that's not in foul trouble. He's going to go pedal to the metal in this particular game here because he wants it really, really bad. And he wants it for the program. He wants it for the city. I mean, I'm sorry, for Chapel Hill and all that other stuff. So, no. If Syracuse has it very, very close, we're going to see something surprising. But if they're down at the end of the first half, I don't think you should be surprised at all. I think North Carolina is going to continue an onslaught. That's just my take. That's what I'm looking at.
And then that adds to the fact that if he's down double digits, like to Virginia, if they do the same thing to North Carolina, you don't see them coming back because you see North Carolina
no.
a superior opponent.
No. I can't see not this team. No. I'm on a record for saying I really don't like this particular North Carolina team. It's not full of personality, but I tell you what, they can play damn basketball, and they are coachable. And I truly believe that they will win this game. That's my early prediction, man. I'm going to go with that.
So one more question about the Syracuse. What about the big men for Syracuse, like Tyler Roberson and then DeJuan Coleman, guys like that in the inside? Do you think knowing that their familiarity, again, against guys like Bryce Johnson for North Carolina, the interior defense, like you said, like Kenny Meeks, like guys like that, do you think they stand a puncher's chance physically the third time around going against them? I know it's a 2-3 zone. It's not really man-to-man that they run. But, I mean, you still got to rebound at the end of the day. You don't rebound in the zone. You rebound by the way you box out.
Right.
Spacing and stuff
right.
like that. Well, what do you think as far as individual matchups with the fours and the fives?
That's the key to this game. That's the key to this game. In that last game, the one with the one in January. I'm trying to remember when in January. See, they're going to have a little bit of a problem. You know what? I'm telling you. You know what? You know me for a couple of years now, and every time I get a question like something like you're asking me right now, it always sends me back to the old days or something that I can refer to. And all I could think of, based on what you just asked, Steve, is in terms of familiarity, is Villanova beating Georgetown, you know, 31 years ago, you know.
You think it has
everyone,
that type of feel to us? You think it has
yeah,
that
because
type of
you got to – What I'm going to tell you why. In that particular game, you know, Georgetown was consensus. There was no one on planet Earth. They were rooting for Villanova because there was a lot of Georgetown haters, but – realistically, nobody expected that to happen. But the X factor that was happening there is that Eddie Pinkney and the rest of the front line were used to seeing Georgetown
yeah.
all the time. You know,
you
so,
some parody
so they knew how to play them. Exactly. They knew how to play these guys. They knew exactly how to approach this game, what kind of poise they were going to need, what the little habits and idiosyncrasies were. You know, they knew it. They knew it. So that's a trait that Syracuse possesses right now. I don't know. So, wow. This is what they got to do. This is what the Irishmen need to do, okay? When they beat Virginia in this last game, and of course, and even before that, when they played Gonzaga, you know, that 2-3 zone that they had on defense was magic. It was magic. When they apply full court pressure on you, and if they pull and they meet you like say half court with it, that's the chance that you can really frustrate North Carolina there. That's your moment. If they can do that, if you can get that kid. Senior, Michael, I can never say his last name. He's been their best player for a while. I can never say his last name. But you get him and Cooney started in the backcourt, get them off to a good start. There's your chance. There's your puncher's chance I was talking about. There's your puncher's chance. That's the only way they can win this game, man. That's their chance. Right there. They have to apply that 2-3 zone. Once they do that and they push up on the backcourt of North Carolina, you may see something. Because what you're doing, because even though North Carolina offensively, they don't spread the floor as good as everybody thinks they do. Okay? What you have to, for North Carolina, in order for North Carolina to win, the Tar Heels to win, they have to get set. They have to get their feet together. They have to get you know, they have to get set, man. They have to get down low in their position. My man there, Meeks, is good for it. You know, he sits right there on the left side of the key and just holds his position, and while the other cats do their little running around, and it causes headaches for the opposing team on defense. But Syracuse's 2-3 zone is magic, man. And you got to beat that thing. Okay? So that's what's going to have to happen. Marcus Page, Bryce Johnson, my man Meeks, they're going to have to play above what they've already done. Okay? I can't really diss Syracuse that quickly, man. They're number 10, but
all
right. You know what happens? You know what happens in tournaments like that. You start growing as you go on, you know. And we've seen some things, too. Middle Tennessee State took out our team in dramatic fashion. Then they turned around and saw Syracuse. They got flat back to Tennessee countryside, man. But what, about 25 points or something?
Yeah, you know?
They took that momentum. Well, first they beat Drayton, who's a very good team, by the way, in the first round. They beat them by 20 points, you know. Then they did Middle Tennessee. Then Gonzaga was no slouch, okay? They took care of them. So now the chest is beating pretty big. Then they ran up against Virginia in that really, really tight ass, which was a scary moment, you know, that scary first half, well, three quarters of a game, okay? Trust me, that gave them ultimate confidence. Syracuse is playing at a high level right now. That 2-3 zone is smacking people upside the head.
But to go
to your earlier question, if they can keep the rebounding close, which I'm having a problem envisioning in my head with these trees that North Carolina has, then they can do it. It's possible.
All right, let's hold off on Syracuse, North Carolina. We'll get back and we'll get to our predictions. Let's get to Oklahoma, Villanova, a game where I thought, they're playing again for the second time this season. They played earlier this year, when they played in that tournament in Hawaii, and Oklahoma won by like 20-plus points. It's no secret. Are they going to be able to stop or contain Buddy Hield, specifically his perimeter shooting? Who's been very, very good this postseason, Chris. Villanova, second time around, do you think Jay Wright and the Villanova Wildcats, do you think did they shock the Sooners? That's the straight up question. Do they shock them? Do they beat them?
That first meeting that they had back in Hawaii,
yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
The Cats looked. Just watching that game, it looked like the Cats just got, you know, Wildcats just got their heads handed to them. That's true. But there was something else that happened in that game that nobody noticed, and that's going to be happening very much on Saturday. In the paint, there was nothing that Oklahoma can do with them. Absolutely nothing. And I'm telling you, Jay Wright knows it. Okay? All right. Now, they were hot from the arc in that game.
Yes, they were.
Okay.
I'm talking about the Oklahoma Sooners. They went
Oklahoma,
14 out of 25 or 26. I mean, he shot
something
over 50% from three.
Yes. Now, I have a feeling that Jay Wright is going to draw up a game plan that's going to really, really limit Buddy Hield's touches. I think they're going to do that. I'm sorry. This is my upset special, and I don't know if you want me to say it now or you want me to say it later, a little later in the podcast or whatever. But I think this is the moment that Oklahoma is going to look a little human. Okay, I really do think so. I really think that, and I'm going to tell you why. Well, first of all, you got to contain their guards. The Oklahoma's guards are the key to this team. Okay, there's no doubt about that. You know, and the way you do that, I'm not really sure, but if the ball is in someone else's hands, and they're very capable of being in Jordan Woodard's or Isaiah Cousins' hands or whatever, they can you have to force that to happen. It might not always work. You know, Oklahoma's better when Buddy Hield has the ball. But if you take it away from Buddy Hield, you have a better chance of winning this game. Okay? Now, if you notice the West Virginia game earlier in this tournament, Buddy Hield did not look – why do we always say – it's like Ray Allen. You have to say both his names together. It's crazy, right? But he didn't look all that sterling because – The Mountaineers, or whatever the name, West Virginia Mountaineers,
yeah.
Their game plan was let other people beat us. Let's take it out of his hands. Okay? And that worked for them for a little while, but they ran out of gas. Okay? Villanova is going to come up with I don't know what it is, Steve, but I do know Jay Wright's system, and he always adjusts to whatever challenge is given him. And I can truly see him going ahead and taking advantage of the fact that he sees an opening or something in the airline there that says, hey, you know what? Our Achilles heel is going to be higher. Let's take the ball out of his hands. Let's get him in foul trouble. Let's get the other guys to beat us, and let's beat them up, and then let's offensively attack them with our running game. That's what I see. You know, the thing is, you at this point in the tournament, the Final Four, one guy, it's got to be a special guy. And right now it's Buddy Hield. Some special guys can beat you by themselves, but I don't know. Nova has a pressure defense that causes enough problems for the rest of that squad. And
so you have guys like Jalen Brunson, Josh Hart, Arcanado.
Yep.
I can never pronounce his name. The guy from Philly.
I can't say his name either.
Senior, man.
Ryan
A. Yep. Let's go with Ryan A.
Yep.
I don't want to butcher his name.
But don't
you think defensively, you think they could duplicate what they did versus the guard? I mean, because the guards for Kansas are no slouch. I think they're very good. There's two true point guards and an off guard in Wayne Selden, and they did a very good job neutralizing. I mean, Devontae Graham made perimeter threes. I think Woodard can knock those down too. But here's my question: do you think who has the advantage at the guards defensively? Is it defensively for Nova against what Oklahoma is bringing to the table offensively this time around, or how do you see the guard play playing out? Who has the advantage as far as I know? Hill's going to get his, but as the guards overall, who do you think has the advantage?
I'm picking Josh Hart and Phil Booth, man, because they're effective. They're effective at driving past their men and drawing fouls at the rim. I think that's a big advantage in a game like this, which is more like a chess match. You know? Also, the Cats never get in foul trouble. Not really. Okay? They're always able to maintain that. If they can attack to the rim, if they can attack, which I know they could, Oklahoma, in that style, Oklahoma ain't got a chance. Oklahoma ain't got a chance because Oklahoma has to rely on shooting from outside. You can't if you're gonna die by the three in the Final Four game in Houston or in those rims. If you boil it down to that, okay, you're gonna die. And let me tell you, I love Buddy Hield. You know,
you think he's peaked
when he's
much,
on. You can't shut him down.
Do you believe that he's a little too hot for himself?
I think this is going to be his Waterloo right here. I think Villanova has something for that ass. I really do. And you're talking to a Buddy Hield fan. You know? You know what? As a matter of fact, I'm trying to remember. When they played that first game, did he even get 20 points?
Buddy Hield,
I think he
I mean, he had like 18, though. I mean, it's not like he didn't, score two or nothing.
They need him to be severely hot.
He was 4 out of 9 for three-point range in that game, and so take it for what it's worth. So right. Who do you have as an advantage? You say you're taking Villanova guards over the Oklahoma guards in this game, in particular game, because
that's going to be. I know that's a bold statement, but I'm going to do that because I don't think I think the Villanova guards in this particular case are very, very underrated. Yeah, you know, I think Josh Hart is going to show you exactly how underrated they are.
I think he's underrated as well. But you know what? Another point that you said that makes them underrated or this game underrated is the fact that they're playing in a big stadium or dome. That shooting could be a little dreadful when you're not on. And if Oklahoma gets off, and they could be off, this could probably play better into the Villanova Wildcats' hands, man. I really do. What other keys in this game?
I heard somebody say, Steve, I read today, I don't know who the writer was, and I don't really know, but I was reading today in one of the periodicals, right, that aren't biased, and I was reading the story, and there was a nice little line the guy wrote. He says, how did he say it? He said, about this matchup, he said, this matchup features a star-led team against a star-less team, and star-less teams always come out on top, and that's true. That I absolutely believe that. That's why 31 years ago, you can't even name nobody off that team anymore. You can probably name Dwayne McClain, maybe Eddie Pinckney, but that's about it. You know, but you do know what happened to Patrick Ewing and Reggie Williams and these guys, Michael Jackson. You know what happened to them. Those were star teams against the star-less teams. And Villanova has a system that they've always kept. You know, it's not much different from – I mean, the athletes are better in the Jay Wright era than they were with Massimino. But the system, that scrappy, you know, that full court pressure, you know, share the ball, space the guy during lane kind of game, it's the very same one. And that's why they win every year, you know. And this time they're gonna pull an upset. This is going to be really, really crazy. People are going to lose their mind because, once again, the bracket is going to be tore up again.
I see where you're going, man. I don't – actually, your point of view, I think I'm going to have to side with where you're going with this. I think you have a great point.
It's scary. It's scary.
Yeah.
It's scary.
I think you make a great point. I think Villanova defensively, especially on the perimeter, I think that proved that to me versus the Kansas. That they could play with Oklahoma. They can. They could definitely do that. I know what? If we was to make the prediction, and we'll do that soon.
Okay.
You make a lot of great points, man. Villanova's no slouch, man. I don't know if that Seton Hall game in the Big East tournament woke them up a little bit. Because
I think it did. I think you're right.
Can you go back to that game as far as what happened with Seton Hall? I mean, Seton Hall really – he took it to Nova, and I didn't think Nova was going to be on the fence the way they were in that Big East tournament at the Garden. But if you want to recap, sometimes when teams get smacked, we could say the same thing about Syracuse too. Same thing when in the ACC tournament versus Pittsburgh, and all of a sudden Syracuse comes out.
You know, I missed that particular game, but I heard what happened. Yeah,
These teams have it's like there's a history of these teams where they lose in their conference tournament early on, and it's like a wake-up call. I mean, it's like, let's not take this thing for granted, epiphany or something. And then they get into the tournament, and they're destroying teams. I mean, I know Villanova, they won by 5 like against Kansas, but before that, I mean, it kind of dominated a lot of these teams in the tournament, man. Same thing with Syracuse.
You were right. It was... Let me think about this. Villanova had already had – they were on a winning – that broke a winning streak, that particular win. I mean, a particular loss, you know. I don't want to say it was about 12 or 13 games, something like that. I don't know. But it was a winning streak going. And what happened was they lost that game. They lost that game at the end. They lost that game because of the end, the way it ended. I remember – Ryan missing a drive, then he And then, you know, later on he came out to let me think. They got humbled there. I think they lost that game, Steve, as opposed to Seton Hall beating them, you know? Because Ryan, he turned the ball over like two times in the last maybe 30 seconds, okay? And let me see. I think they were trying to go for a three. I'm trying to remember. They were trying to go for a three. It was about 13, 14 seconds left. And Ryan dropped, you know, he turned the ball over. Then they had to foul Cena, the guy Cena from Seton Hall. Cena hit the two free throws. He iced the game, but I think it was more of a collapse on Villanova's part in that overtime. That's what I remember. Okay, because Seton Hall, I mean Nova probably scored like just 3 points in that overtime. After, you know, and that's what did them in. So I think they beat themselves. That's why I always kind of had confidence with them, and I was very, very happy with their seeding, you know, at number two in behind Kansas in that in the South region. So that's what happened there. That's all I really remember from it. But I know one thing. You're right. It woke them up. You know, Jay Wright had a nice long talk with them and said, hey, look, we are lucky to get this two seed after that debacle right there, and this is what we have to do going forward. And if you really notice, they really haven't really had a real problem. You know, let's see. They beat this Asheville team up. They weren't even in the damn game. They beat them up by about 30 points. Iowa was supposed to smack them upside their head. That did not happen. That was a 20-point win. Then Miami was supposed to dog them out. Remember that? Oh, Miami's on a roll. They just beat Michigan. I mean, Wichita State and Arizona back-to-back. They are going to be the hottest team. Watch out for them in the Sweet 16, all of this nonsense. And they didn't show up. Villanova just smacked them. That's what they did. That was a 30. It might have been about a 25-point win. I'm not really sure. So what you saw last week against Kansas was no fluke, man. That was real. They battled a giant team, took them completely out of their game plan, frustrated them all night defensively, scrapped with them, you know, probably talked smack. And then also Kansas didn't help themselves with that turnover at the end where Ryan smacked the ball when the guy was holding it up with about, I don't know how many seconds left that was. And they Kansas fell apart there. So the momentum shift or the momentum energy that Villanova possesses right now is going to continue in Houston. See, you don't have to have eight. See, the thing about the Wildcats is that they don't have to have four or five guys shooting threes, you know, like Oklahoma does. You know, they're used to playing scrappy down low ball because they're definitely going to lose this game. The Wildcats, rather, are definitely going to win this game on the boards. I mean, there's no doubt about that. I have no confidence, no doubt about that. And I have no confidence in Oklahoma winning that particular battle. That's not going to happen. Okay? So we got to go back to the shooters again. And, you know, with Heil and the other two guys, you know, Woodard and Cousins and them, they can make it interesting. But if you take the touches away from Heil, whoa, and which is what Jay Wright's planning on doing, my man, look out. Here we go, because this is going to be a totally different matchup than what you saw in the beginning of the year. So,
all right,
cool, I'm picking
man.
Villanova. I'm picking Villanova.
So,
and also,
so you got Villanova.
Chris Jenkins
over,
is going to be the X factor. Yeah, good.
So Villanova over Oklahoma.
I am. I got to go with that.
We got a score. You got may have, you don't have to give us a score, but what about how much? By 2 points, by 8 points.
I'm gonna give it exactly 8 points. You're right. I'm gonna give it eight points.
Okay, I'm gonna say Villanova by five. I think Villanova wins. If they play the same game, I'm banking on them playing a similar game like they did against Kansas, and I hope that works. I hope they can play that game. If they play that game, I can see them winning. defensively. I'm talking about defensively. And
right.
Steady
right.
point guard play, whether it's Brunson, you know, the guard, Ryan Ney or Josh Hart.
Right.
Booth. I think this is going to be a fun one between the guards. This is a good game of the guards between those two teams. And
right.
I think Jay Wright uses his motivation of playing early in the year, getting smacked around. We have a chance to redeem ourselves. Why not use that
mm-hmm.
as motivation? Great motivation, too. What about North Carolina and Syracuse? Who do you have winning and how much? By how much?
Man, like I said at the outset, this is a really, 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 really tough one for me. One of the reasons is because there's a little emotion with it. I don't know if they can actually beat. See, the one part of me says, can North Carolina actually beat them a third time? The other part of me says,
good.
Syracuse on a hell of a roll right now, where their confidence is really, really flying, you know. And I'm just caught at this minute. But just based on the abilities of the players and this, just based on that, I have to go with North Carolina. But I really don't want to, you know, because the Orange, like I stated earlier, the Orange are on a roll, man. Dayton were no slouches. I'm not counting Middle Tennessee because they came in a little bit. Well, they showed their true colors when Villanova played them. I'm not Villanova. The Orange played them. I don't know. They're on some kind of roll, man. That last meeting, they showed glimpses of how they can beat the Tar Heels, you know? If they can keep the rebounding close, then they can shoot better from behind the arc than the Tar Heels because they can handle their guards. I don't know. You have to keep North Carolina off balance. You got to make Bryce Johnson and Paige and all, you got to make sure, because these guys are seniors. And they know what they're not trying to, you know, this is going to be one of those one shining moment joints, right? They ain't trying to go out like that. But
I'm going to go with Carolina. Let me just make it simple. I think
reluctantly.
Yeah, they'll beat them a third time, I think. I wouldn't be surprised if they did, but if I had to put a probability on it, I think I like Carolina's 70% chance of winning this game. I mean, going with that, North Carolina in the final on Monday, then you would have Villanova in the final. Now, if those two teams were to match up, because we probably won't have an episode to after the, you know, sometime next week. If that happens to be the case, do you want to make a quick prediction if it is North Carolina and Villanova? Or, I mean, if you
yes,
want to paint the scenarios before we get out, because
yes, I do.
We'll wrap
I believe,
up in
no,
a few.
I believe Villanova will. I believe that. See, that's the dream. There's your dream matchup, and I believe Villanova can defeat them. I will tell you why. Because, okay. If it's Villanova, North Carolina, Villanova's defense will frustrate the bigs, the seniors of Tar Heels. It will. The key has, in that particular game, the Tar Heels backcourt, which we haven't heard about all tournament long, will have to step up. And I mean step up. They can't be soft. They have to sort of like alter the game plan a little bit. Because they just can't come in looking at like, you know, just we're just trying to, you know, force the ball in, download to the bigs, and we're just trying to toe the line. They can't come in like that. They can't do it, and that's going to be the key right there. That's what I'm thinking. And Villanova's guards are better, okay, but Villanova also plays the kind of game that they don't play to lose. They play to frustrate you. You know, you're in a dogfight every time you play Villanova, the Villanova teams. You're in a dogfight each and every time. They don't have a habit of getting down by very much because of the way they play, the way they watch. They watch the clock from the very beginning, even if they're from 14:59 on, they watch the clock. And what they do by that, what that means is that they're very mindful. They play in sequences. They're very mindful what they must do 5 minutes in, 10 minutes in, 15 minutes in. They're like that. Whereas North Carolina plays more conventional. It's like get the balls down to the bigs. Let's decimate them. Let's back them up. Let's back them down. Let's hit the boards there like that. So you got two very good rebounding teams here, with the X factor being that probably, they're both pretty good defensively as well, with a slight edge to Villanova. But guard play, I gotta go with the Villanova Wildcats, because in this tournament, when you get this far, you got to have great backcourts. You got to have a damn good backcourt.
I'm with you, man. I'm gonna go with the Wildcats, man. If that happens, matter of fact, I'll put it like this: the winner of Villanova Oklahoma wins the national championship. I'll go that far to say that. How about that?
You know, that's fair. That's fair.
I'm going with the. If anybody knows, it should be me. I've watched, you know, guards from the team that I root for. Superior point guard, off guard play has dominated the tournament in recent years. I like that
That's
formula.
Right.
I'm going with the winner of the 6 o'clock game, or whatever time is 6 o'clock hour Eastern Standard
mm-hmm.
Time, Oklahoma or Villanova. Whoever comes out of that wins the national championship. Any final thoughts, sir?
Marcus Paige has to play a Buddy Hill kind of game for them to win a national championship. And I'm not sure he's that kind of player.
Nah, he's not.
That's right.
That's not a knock to him. It's not a knock. It's just,
no, I don't say it. No, I'm totally rolling with you. I'm totally rolling with you. He has to play that kind of game. And Villanova, look, the difference in styles is very important. North Carolina plays big-time, wonderful college basketball. Villanova plays they're like the fifth straight championship. Wait, they're like the type of team that wins their fifth straight season championship at the Y League. You know? They with a swagger, with sort of a they don't talk mess. They don't. They're very, very tough. They have their resolve is a lot more tougher than North Carolina's is. North Carolina's talented. Villanova's more gritty. You know, they're battlers. They're scrappers. You know, and I believe in a championship situation, that's what wins championships. That's all. No knock again to Marcus Paige or Berry or. Who else has been backcourt with them guys? That guy Britt, who played at Oak Hill, which means he's got some ball in him, you know. But I can't see them beating North Carolina. I mean, I'm sorry, Villanova. I can't see it. I can't not based on the question you just asked me, Steve. I cannot see that. Not in the championship game.
I was going to say, I just hope for some good games. Enjoy the games. Let's have some fun, man. This is the last weekend of college men's basketball. Oh, by the way, let's just real quick. I think it's safe to say it's the UConn women's basketball team going to win. The women's
That's so.
I mean, we just got to put the women's basketball. Give the ladies like 5 seconds.
And I think the argument that the game that somebody brought up, even though it sounds wrong, about it's boring because UConn win every year like they are. Actually, there's some merit there, but not for the reasons you think. I don't have a problem with them winning all the time, but if the women are winning all the time and they have a program, look, Gino hasn't recruited. No, listen to the statement. He hasn't really recruited the last, I'd say, 12 to 15 years. Not recruited. He merely says, hey, he'll send a letter out. Hey, Atlanta Deladon, we want you. This is our resume. And, of course, the girls are going to go right over there. It happened with Tina Charles.
Oh,
it happened with Maya Moore. It happened with Diana. It happened with this girl, Brittany, or whatever her name is, the center here.
Brianna. Brianna Stewart, yeah.
It happens all the time. And so now other programs are really getting nicely built around the nation, man. Baylor, John Staley's doing a hell of a job in South Carolina. You know, there's things that are happening. But the truth of the matter is, let's be real, you know, Geno reloads with the best female players in the country. Each and every time. And those,
I don't mean to
and
laugh.
If you're a female basketball
player,
you want to go
great.
To UConn. Huh?
Yeah. I don't mean to laugh.
You
want to
go to UConn.
Yeah, man.
It's over. This particular one is over, too. This girl's going to win four straight.
I love it. It's unprecedented, man. They're literally probably the women's... They're like the women's version of UCLA, like 40 years later. I mean, it's kind of like...
Yes.
That's what they are. They're UCLA.
I think it's news when they lose.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I agree.
I just cannot see them. And also, the other thing about the UConn Huskies that needs to be emphasized is that they are always ready. You know, they are a well-prepared basketball program. Always. There's never, ever, ever been a UConn team. You know, it's never had a team that just, well, you know, this is not as good as the last. We never said nothing like that about the UConn girls. We never said, well, you know, this team isn't as good as this particular team is not as good as the Lobo. We don't talk about – nobody talks that way.
My last quick point about that, real quick, and then we'll get off. They would – actually, the run would be even longer if it wasn't for Brittany Griner. And they had no answer for that. You know, she's
right.
Too tall. A little bit of athleticism. They got in the Huskies' way. But outside of that, man – the run could have been even a lot longer if it wasn't for the Baylor. I'm trying to tell people that. But
put it this way, the girl I'm trying to I can't believe I forgot her name, Breonna Stewart. And Mariah Jefferson are first team All American. Okay. And this kind of thing is always happens. It sounds impressive. It would be impressive for any school, but. It always happens with UConn. They always have, I mean, Maya Moore and Tina Charles, first teamers, you know? Mm-hmm. Lobo and my girl, I forgot her name, the point guard back in the day.
Oh, Rizzotti. Yeah.
Rizzotti. Always, they can do this. And also this year, Valerie was
or Sue Bird and Diana Taurasi. Can't forget
Taurasi, right. There you go. But also, Morgan Tuck was a second teamer, man.
Yeah.
So it's not like it's not like you know it's basically we're just gonna go to these two and be nah they reload beautifully every year and
I do
you know and also Mariah Jefferson she's the defensive player of the year she's a you know these teams are look UConn girls are just a powerhouse and I understand the bickering. That's a little bit rooted in jealousy, let's be honest, okay? But, hey, it is what it is. The only way to stop them, just beat them. When you beat them, then you can talk the most, you can talk, you can say what you say. You know, these girls are incredible, man. They're the best team in college basketball, period.
Yeah. I'm out of words, man. We're out, man. I guess we're done, man. We'll have some fun and enjoy the games, men and women's, over the weekend. Bleed Blue Show, Steve and Chris, BleedBlueShow.com, Twitter, Instagram, Google+, at the Bleed Blue Show, Forum for the Fans, archives on iTunes, Podcast Republic, TuneIn, your Stitcher apps. We're done, man. Huh? Have some fun, man. We'll be in touch. Check out the Bleed Blue Show. We'll probably be on the Twitter and the Facebook fan page throughout the college basketball. Keep tabs on that.
Yeah, let's do that. And you know what? I'm out of words, too. But I'm going to tell you, man, this is an absolute fantastic deal. Always, look, we are growing. This fan base is growing. The stakeholders are probably the most knowledgeable in all sports that we cover that you're ever going to hear on the podcast anyway. Please do, as Steve said, tune in, download, listen to the archives. You know, check us out on Facebook and Google and Twitter and Instagram and all everything else, and just stay tuned. All right, man. Bleed Blue, man. Have a good night, Steve.
Absolutely, man. Bleed Blue.
Bleed
Blue. Can you dig it?
Bleed.
Can you dig it?
Oh, shoot. The Knicks got a lead.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
That's two straight. That's two straight wins. Hold on. Wait, stop that real quick. That's two straight Wednesdays. I know the season's over. I just wanted to put that in there. Sorry, Knicks fans. You know, we catch that in the Knicks box.
Can you dig it?
I love
it.
Can you dig it?
I can't believe I saw that. Watching the game.
Hey, get on out of here. I'll talk to you later.
We'll be out.
We out.
Blue.
No doubt.
Blee blue.